Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Just a Sip. I am your host, Justin Sylvester. I am back. I am ready. And today, I'm taking a sip with someone I have admired for many years. This woman has shaped how I felt about comedy time and time again with her stand-up routines, with her appearances in some of my favorite shows. And I'm so glad to have her here for Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. Please welcome the one and only Margaret Cho. You guys, Margaret Cho is in the house. I have loved this lady for so long, and I'm so happy I get to sit across from you. I wish we weren't in a damn pandemic and we could have been sipping a cocktail at this office.
I know. I wish.
How's everything been?
It's good for what it is. I'm fully vaccinated.
Ooh.
Which she's excited. And I'm really glad. I'm really grateful. Almost all the people that are really important to me are fully vaccinated. And we're so ready. We're so ready to just get out there.
The greatest thing happened to me, my booty call that I've had for 2 years, just texted me and told me that he got his second vaccine. So yesterday was a very great day for me.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
I know. I never in my life would have thought that at 33 years old, this would be the thing that got me out of bed. You know what I mean? I'm like,
it's beautiful.
Oh my God. Finally. Are you single in this pandemic?
I have a boo, but it's not like, do you somehow really love being kind of single on paper? I think that's really same. Like the best feeling, but at the same time, I enjoy companionship. So it's really, I have the best of both worlds, I think.
But how did that work out for you? Because I know I have one of my closest friends is Asian. And every time her parents, we could see them, they could be in a coma. They will wake up and say, when are you going to get married? We could be in the grocery store. And it's like, so, but when are you going to get married? She can win a Nobel Peace Prize. And her mother would say, congratulations, but when are you going to get married?
My parents are super upset about it. But at the same time, they've never been able to really figure out my journey in terms of partnership. And they also accept everything that I do because they know this is like, this is a new world. This is a new person. This is a new life and a new country still. You know, even though they've been here for 60 years, they definitely feel like new.
But I feel like you gave them no choice. Like, I think if you're a comedian at 14, you're taking from experience. And I think your parents were like, all right, this is Margaret. And we may never have a grandchild, but we're going to have a happy, healthy, and well-adjusted young lady.
Yes. And they're really, I mean, they trust me now, I think, which is really important. So I think that's really what it's all about.
Yeah. I mean, but look, I'm still on the fence whether I think bisexuals are real people.
Most people like really question it because they can't see past, there's a lot of people who use the term bisexual in order to soften the blow of their gayness.
Yes. Yes, yes, I did it. I was one of those people.
Yeah. So it's hard for people. Yeah, definitely.
How did you know? How did, like, because I know when I knew at a young age that I like men. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I feel like as a girl, I think most of my girlfriends, my sister, I feel like everybody had that girl crush. You know, when you're 14 years old, you get a girl crush on somebody and you don't know what it means and you're like going through the whole thing. But how did you go through your journey and come out of it and say, okay, I like both?
Well, I started as a lesbian. So to me, it was really like the 90s. I had long jean shorts. I had like chain on one shoulder, a messenger bag on the other shoulder. Big Doc Martin boots.
You were butch. You were butch.
I was super butch, and I would not stop coming out. Like, you know, like, I'm gay. Like, it was real Queer Nation kind of stuff. It was, like, really, like, silence equals death. We're here to fight AIDS with our gay brothers. We're here to, like, change the world. It was a very revolutionary time for gayness.
Mm-hmm.
You had to really come out. And then, like, in the 2000s, I was like, it was like a real questioning of it. And then I was straight for a while. Had a juicy tracksuit, some Uggs, a flip phone. She was straight for a minute with a Cadillac.
She got a Chihuahua. She got a Chihuahua.
She got a Chihuahua. She was straight for a minute. And then it was like, wait, I don't think I have. So it was really like, just a process of finding out, you know, it was a fact-finding mission.
Yeah, but I love that we live in a place and in a generation now where you can do that openly and you can change your pronouns Monday and change them back on Thursday because, you know, you're back at this place. And, you know, it's so interesting because I feel like Hollywood is normally late to the party. Like, we still have gay men who are in the closet and don't want to come out and are marrying women because they don't want to lose their careers. Yet the youth is, you know, I feel like a singer every other day is like, I'm also bisexual, pansexual, trisexual, and I don't know what it means.
Right. I think younger people also really have got it going on. Like, they know what their freedoms are. And that's really amazing. You know, they're owning up to like all of the different parts of themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's powerful. And I think it's a good lesson. I think we've evolved.
I think that we are teaching people that being authentically yourself is nothing to be ashamed of or afraid of. But I also see where people use their gayness as a tool to sell and commercialize themselves.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I think it's great though. Like, it's like, whatever is used to kind of just like make it publicly known that queerness is cool, I love it. If there are like ulterior motives, it doesn't really matter because somebody else is going to hear it and be like, hey, you know what? Maybe I am. And then they'll realize that they are. And that's what they've been like searching for.
I mean, yeah, I think you're ultimately right. As an Asian female comedian, I feel like for people to take you seriously, you had to work three times as hard as any guy in the industry.
Probably. But I also know that anybody who is kind of othered in show business is that we do have to work harder to get half of the recognition. But it only makes us better artists. Like, I'm not opposed to work and I'm not opposed to kind of proving what I can do because that's what the whole point of it is. So it is just the journey and the way it's kind of formed, but I'm okay with working on my skill and selling that part of my art. So it's cool, you know, it's fun.
I often wonder this because, you know, as somebody who is comedian adjacent, I used and I've leaned into the Black stereotypes, you know, in my own form of comedy and getting ahead in Hollywood. And I look back and I question myself at times and I wonder, did I play into the stereotypes that we hate now because I
not only embraced it, but I used it in my own stand-up. Do you ever wonder if you did the same thing?
Sure, but why not? I mean, because it's like these caricatures of who we are were used to oppress us for so long. We use them because it's the language of who we are to white people. So I feel like it's fine. I don't question it because I know that it's a way to communicate identity to simple stereotypes are just sometimes the way that we're understood by the mainstream community. And so if that's a way to get in the door, it's perfectly viable because it's like, if it's used to oppress us, we're able to use it to gain an advantage and get in there so that we can show our true selves. You know, it's just a way to introduce identity, but it's also definitely problematic in a lot of ways. You know, I've been around show business for 35 years. And so you have to, you have to sort of change with the times and understand that race is ever changing in the face of white privilege. And we're learning more and more.
You know, I always say if somebody else is going to do it who's not a part of my culture and is going to make money off of it and profit off of it, why can't I? And why shouldn't we as a community? I also say, don't come for my struggle unless you've been through it. So unless you've been a gay Black man in South Louisiana, bitch, don't ask me why I'm doing it. Okay?
Yeah, don't try it. Don't try it.
don't try it. And that's where it becomes an issue is when people start to try it, but they've never had to live it.
Right. And so we're really part of the journey and the story of who we have emerged through centuries of oppression and centuries of pain. And so I think it's very meaningful to question ourselves, but also to know that it's okay.
Yeah. I read somewhere, and I can't believe this even happened to you, but when you were on All American Girl, you talked about how you had to lose 30 pounds in 2 weeks. Who the had the conversation with you? Who had the gall? Like, please tell me it was Harvey Weinstein that was like, hey, I need you to lose 30 pounds in 2 weeks. Like, I need to know who it was so I can go and shoot this person.
Harvey, you lose 30 pounds. He has it to lose. He can lose it. I mean, no, I think that the amount was pressed upon me. It was the urgency of like, do it quickly, like do it as fast as you can, because this is television. And if we look at television, it was different then. There was only 4 channels. But a very narrow view of who Asian women were. Asian women were traditionally very like small, quiet, submissive, things that I am not in any way. So they're trying to contain me and try to make me sort of palatable for white audiences because they just didn't know what Asian people would be accepted as or how they would be accepted. So there was this fear around it, like, oh, we didn't realize she was fat. Like, weirdest thing. But it wasn't a person. It was really the ideas of television, the ideas of women, the ideas of what they were doing in this TV show that they were trying. So it wasn't like a person that was like saying, oh,
it was
do
the
this.
Pressure. It was the pressure of everything going on around you.
Yes. And it set off a lifetime of like serious, like, eating issues. You know, fortunately now it's kind of like, I don't care, but it's very much a part of Hollywood and how women were viewed. In the 90s, you know, if you're looking at the era of like Kate Moss and grunge, and like there was like a lot of feminist empowerment, but at the cost of like body autonomy. we didn't have the sort of body like acceptance that we have now.
For sure. Well, I mean, on one channel, one of the biggest shows ever, you know, Alec McBeal, you had Calista Flockhart, you know, all of the actresses back then, the waif was in. There was no J-Lo. There was no Kardashian. There was none of these women who had curved it out, you know, and I totally understand that. But I love how you put it in perspective. You were like, there were 4 channels. I'm like, look, you didn't grow up with Orson Welles. Like, we're talking about the 90s.
Yeah, it's a very different era and a different, there were different motives to keeping women contained. You know, now we know more, certainly.
You must have had the time of your damn life in the 90s with no smartphones, being famous and being funny, you must have gotten kicked out of every after party.
She was real cute in the 90s. And there were some fun things that went down. But also, it was sad because I didn't like the way that I looked. I didn't really enjoy being different. You know, I was like sad that I was like the only Asian person there. Like, it was like weird. It was scary. And I didn't really love the way that I looked. I didn't really love who I was. And so I didn't get to enjoy my youth. We didn't take any pictures. Like, if you took a picture, you would have to like take it to the drugstore and get it developed.
Yes. I miss those days.
It's really sad. If you like went to go meet somebody, you had to go. You couldn't just text them 5 minutes before, hey, I'm not coming. You had to go. If you wanted to go to something, you would like have to read about it in the newspaper and circle it with a pencil and then go there with a map.
Oh, you know, I grew up in the 90s. Well, the 2000s is when I like hit my stride. So I couldn't imagine booty calling with, you know, one of those Thomas Murphy guys trying to get all over LA.
You know, it wasn't easy when you would have to meet somebody in a chat room.
By the way, let's talk about meeting somebody in a chat room. Because for some reason, we acted like we didn't see Dateline. Like, we didn't know that people went f***ing missing from meeting dudes in chat rooms.
I was pretty lucky. Like, I didn't have any situations like that. Fortunately, for whatever reason, everything kind of worked out okay. But yeah, I think it became dangerous later. And also, I was a full-on adult. Like, I was in my late 20s, 30s before I even started with that. So that
was. But you were also Margaret Cho. So if Margaret Cho went missing for 3 days, people would be like, what the f- happened?
Yeah. Somebody would know. So there was a lot there that I was like, I guess it just became, because it's like so faceless and anonymous.
Yeah. I was 16 when I first like met someone in a chat room, like, and just talked to him a little bit. I never ever bit the bullet and actually met up with someone on from a chat room. But I remember thinking, oh my God, if people ever found out that I was like chatting in a chat room and would ever even consider meeting with a random person, like just a thought process. And like Natalie Holloway had like happened when I was in high school. So I had all of those things going through my head. Craigslist killer had happened at the time.
Yes.
So and I was living in Louisiana.
You know, it's just like, I wouldn't go on it now, but.
Back then, you would do it.
I don't know. There was something about it that was less illicit, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was something that was just more innocent, but of course now it's just too scary.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's so crazy because I remember when online dating became cool all of a sudden. Like, I remember being in high school and college and having my aunt online dating, and everybody would be like, what the f- are you doing? Are you not scared? Like, what's going on? Are you crazy? Yeah. And, you know, they were ahead of their times, and she would meet guys and go to dinners. And then every now and then there'd be a big red flag. But people used to judge people for online dating. And now it's our primary way of meeting people.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's crazy, but it's also, of course, it's like that technology precedes everything now.
Yeah.
So I think it's great.
I love technology because I feel like, especially with this podcast, I've been so lucky that in the Black Lives Matter movement and the George Floyds and the Breonna Taylors, I have been able to not only pivot and bring these stories and people's feelings about it to life, I've also been very lucky that the audience that follows me and listens to me, they're open to hearing these stories in this type of way. And I heard that on the Mark Rochow, The Mortal Minority, you are going to be doing the same thing and bringing some forgotten Asian stories to the forefront again. What was your thought process behind that?
Well, Mortal Minority had been a segment on my podcast in the first season, and now we've just brought it to be the primary subject because of the rising cases of Asian American hate crimes over the last year, but also the historical context of all of the hate crimes that have happened, and also not just perpetrated against us, but perpetrated by us. So there's a lot of history that I had no idea about.
Yeah.
That I wanted to learn about and, you know, discuss and also promote these different organizations that are helping the victims of hate crimes overall. Like for, you know, the increase of paranoia around the coronavirus, and it's just an excuse really for people to act out. But it's important because a lot of technology has helped us understand that hate crimes are alive and well, and it's really crazy how we've allowed it to happen for so long. And so I think that technology has really helped us. And hopefully when we actually come back to, you know, really open society, then we'll come to terms with our own biases and prejudices that exist within our society and in ourselves.
Yeah. You know, I mean, look, I'm the first to say, you know, Black people as a community, as a whole, sometimes we are hard on ourselves and hard on the people that look like us when it comes to colorism within the Black community, when it comes to socioeconomic situations in the Black community. So I always say, you know, we need to really, you know, if we're going to say Black Lives Matters, we need to make sure that we say Black Trans Lives Matters and Black and the darker Black Lives Matters and all of these you know, things happen. And I think a lot of times, you know, talking to a friend of mine who was on this show just a few weeks ago, Erin Lim Rhodes, you know, she was very open and honest about the inter-race racism in the Asian community. And it was one of the first times I had actually heard an Asian person actually talk about it because, you know, it's kind of like us. Like what happens in Fight Club stays in Fight Club. But
it's a huge problem. And it's really, it has to do with a lot of like, historical struggle between our nations of origin. And it's like old biases that come and don't help us out as uniting as Asian Americans. So we have to really root it out. And that's why I think the first step in learning to cope with racism is look at the racism within our own being.
Yeah.
That's really important. So yes, it's crazy.
For Asian Americans and Asian people, I feel like, and again, I'm talking about my friend who enlightened me, you know, the Asian way was put your head down, don't make too much noise and keep on going. What's it finally feel like to say, we're not going to just put our heads down anymore. We are going to stand up and fight.
It's very freeing and it's very cathartic. And it's really, I mean, it's time. And I'm really grateful for it. I'm glad.
I love that. I bet you feel like in some way, because you have this platform and because you are, I keep on calling you the Mark Rochow, you have to, like, you can't just sit around and not do shit anymore.
Yeah. And it's like so gratifying to see so many people be supportive of it and to look to stopping Asian hate as being a real movement and a real motivation. So yes, it's great.
I love that. What's this Netflix movie? Good on paper, getting that Netflix money.
What is this? It's a comedy that was written by Eliza Schlesinger. She stars in it and she's great. And it's all about this relationship. So it's a true story that she had with somebody who, it's a very intricate story. It's crazy. We could all identify. She's really funny. And it's a really cool movie. And I hope people watch it. It'll be out pretty soon.
Margaret, I'm bummed. You said something that is going to stick with me for like a week. Uh-huh. I'm upset that when you were coming up and you were supposed to be enjoying this ride to the top, that you never felt like you just never felt comfortable there, which is sad to me because I always imagine you in my head as being the one who finally gets that party started. Like, oh, Margaret Cho's in the house, bitch. It's about to get crazy. Hide the tequila. You know, that's what I think of when I think of you. So the fact that you didn't get a chance to enjoy that kind of bums me out a little bit.
Yeah, and it's sad.
I know. Do you enjoy it now? Sad. When you walk in a room and people are like, yeah, Margaret Cho.
Yeah, I really live it. I mean, now it's like, you've got to enjoy it. And that's why I try to explain to younger people, like, you've got to really embrace your beauty, your joy, yourself, find what it is that makes you happy, and really try to just feel good because life goes by really fast.
But let me ask you this. Do you think if you weren't, let's say you were a CPA, let's say you weren't famous, let's say we never saw the stand-up comedy, we've never seen the Sex and the City, we had never seen you in all of those things, do you think that insecurity would have been as strong as it was?
Oh, yeah.
Just because I think,
yeah.
Is it a womanly thing? It's like, you know, girls go through that.
It's society. It's society towards women. It's the way the times were, you know, that kind of invisibility. I think that if I was a young person now, I would definitely have an easier time of it because we have more of an idea of like the media expressing different identities as being joyful and beautiful.
Yes.
And also social media helps a lot too. So we're more engaged as a society to reflect back what is true. And so I think that's really helpful. But that's only been in the last few years, really.
Oh, for sure. I mean, look, as a kid, I thought I was less than because I had darker skin. You know, I sometimes used to lie when I would go on dates and say that I was biracial because I assumed in South Louisiana and in my mindset, you know, when you grow up and people value lighter skinned Black people your whole life, it gives you a f-ing complex. Yeah. And when people talk about, can you believe that she would brighten her skin and she would bleach this and she bought that? I'm like, I can believe it because I know what that little voice inside feels like. And I know what it sounds like when you tell yourself you're not good enough because you're too dark. If that voice was a tiny bit louder or I had been through one or two more other things in life, I maybe would have taken that step in life. But I didn't experience what that person experienced because she felt more compelled to go down that road.
Yeah, it's really crazy. Sad. It's sad that we can't just embrace who we are and embrace the beauty of who we are. And it's really that society's changed so much to come around to it. And it needs to come around more, for sure. But
yeah,
it's getting better.
I'm so happy you took this sip. And I'm just so happy that I can talk to a real Asian woman who's out there, who wants change and who's doing it not only for herself, but for other people and for other people to get this message. And I can't wait to check out The Margaret Cho, The Mortal Minority. I think it's something that I need, you know?
Yeah.
I say, if I'm not learning, then a bitch is not living right. You know, I had to learn, literally, I had to learn. I am in the letter people, as Dave Chappelle would call us. I am the G in LGBTQ+IA. And I find that I'm learning so much more about my L's and about, you know, about the G's and the T's and everyone else. And I'm trying my hardest to keep evolving because I know as a gay man, we continuously evolve, you know? And I'm not afraid to say, as a Black person, I sometimes have to educate myself on Black issues. And as a gay person, I have to educate myself on gay issues because my name is not Britannica. I'm not an encyclopedia. You know what I mean? Right.
We're all learning.
It's like when people are like, I need to ask you a question about what happened in 1865. It's like, bitch, I don't even know what happened in 1865 to Black people. Like, just because I'm Black doesn't mean I know everything, but I'm working on it. I'm working on it every day.
Right. Me too.
I'm going to come on that journey with you, Margaret Cho.
I love it.
Bye, Margaret Cho.
Thank you. Bye.
Oh my God, we just had Margaret Cho on the show. If you have not subscribed, rate, review, send this podcast to a friend who needs to hear it, who, you know, maybe has wanted to learn more about myself, about Margaret Cho, about what's going on with Asian Americans right now. And follow me at Instagram, Justin A. Sylvester. I changed my IG handle. The Lady Sitter has died. And Justin A. Sylvester is here. And I'll see you guys here next week for another Just the Sip.